10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We should have the first contact visible on the right hand side of the sun.
But in that last 30 seconds or so, as the solar crescent shrinks,
another one was
and sort of the horns of that crescent start coming together and collapsing.
I'm Glenn Schneider.
At the edge of the Hustru Observatory in Houston, Arizona, a little bit photosphere.
Principal investigator.
At that point, everything is called the seed, which is the exoplanetary of the sun. Mission
that there is a phenomenon that's taking place in the sky. In fact, if you ask me which was the most searing event I've ever witnessed in astronomical terms, it was the totality. It brought out the poet in me.
But I am an eclipse chaser, and I'm an eclipse chaser because of my love of eclipses. I'm an astronomer by profession, but an eclipse chaser by choice and by hobby. I'm not really a solar astronomer. That's not my field. And my passion for eclipses started in 1970, when I was 14 years old. I had always been interested in astronomy. I knew I was going to be an astronomer when I was 5 years old. And I had read up over the years, and I thought I knew everything about solar eclipses by reading books for 10 years, until I was about 14. And I had an opportunity, I grew up in New York City, where you could never see the stars, much like Delhi, same light pollution and haze. It was much worse. The haze was much worse then. But I was a member of an astronomy club, and the club, we had a bus going down to North Carolina for a total solar eclipse. And of course, I went to that, and I brought my small 4-inch telescope and binoculars and camera, and I thought I was well prepared for this event. And we set up in the middle of a football stadium, a nice view of the sky. And when the moon shadow came over and when totality started, I had a well-rehearsed, well-practiced photographic program I was going to do, and when I was going to use my telescope, and when I was going to use my binoculars. And I just stood there literally awestruck, just binoculars hung around my neck, the telescope stood there, and I just stared up at the sky for 2.5 minutes. I couldn't move. I was just stunned by the event, purely from the aesthetic standpoint, just the beauty and the awe and just the magnificence of the view. It was not at all as I had read in all of these books describing the phenomena of the corona and the prominences, just the majesty of the spectacle of it, which you can't describe to somebody. You can talk about it, you can take pictures, you can show today videos, and you can't capture it, you can't explain it. It's something you have to see.
I looked at that eclipse and I said, God, that's me. Because I had never seen such intensity in black. I'd never seen the black of the moon with the corona on its side. It was speaking to me far more than the grandeur of the corona. It was telling me in its intenseness about how I felt, but how I cannot say it. It helped me suddenly find articulation.
August 11, 1999, you know, another total solar eclipse. It was passing from Samakhiali, Bhuj, through, you know, in Gujarat. And this time I actually planned not to conduct any photography. And this time I was a big fan of Pink Floyd and a particular song called Comfortably Numb, and a particular part of that song, which is the solo where the guitar is playing. And so this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to look at the most amazing phenomena I have known, listening to the most amazing piece of music I had known. So I took my Walkman at that time and two cassettes rewound at that place where the solo would begin. Now I took my Walkman and, you know, at the time of total, it was clouded. So sun was not visible, but someone was doing a countdown that this is a time when the sun would start eclipsing, and its darkness started falling. I switched on my music. It was a hair-raising experience once again. Even as I'm talking to you, you know, I can feel goose pimples and hair-raising. It was so awesome that, you know, I was starting listening to that music, but nothing was making sense. The whole eclipse experience, even without the sun visible, overloaded all my senses. I had to, you know, make my hearing sense free, so I threw the Walkman away. So I just threw it away. That, you know, not even a second should be wasted in listening to that crap. And I would just concentrate on the sun.
Corona was amazing, and I can't seem to forget the third contact. The third contact, when the sun is coming like out like this through a valley on the moon, you know, first a bright light appeared over there, like, you know, somebody is shining a laser in your eye, or it's like you have a molten metal, like you melt iron and then you start pouring out of the crucible, the first drop will appear, and it's, you know, it's irradiating like this, you know, very bright and kind of bluish whitish, very peculiar and special. It's in my mind, you know, how it was growing, that diamond ring was growing like this, and then I was afraid to look at it because I would blind my eye, but the sight was so mesmerizing I couldn't take my eyes off.
Because it's not the light that actually, the sun you see every day in far more, you know, brighter exist. And that doesn't do anything to you. It's that black in the middle that does it all. People say the black does it because it's kind of blocking of the light, and you suddenly realize how important the light is. But I said, no eclipse blocks it, the light. I mean, night has more dark than an eclipse dark. Is it the black suddenly say that I have a voice?
It's a confluence of the human experience and celestial mechanics and the physics of what goes on with the sun, but it's becomes very personal, very interpersonal. You experience an eclipse, a total solar eclipse. You don't just see a total solar eclipse. And when it was over, this 2.5 minute eclipse, it changed my life. I knew at that moment that I was compelled to get back into the moon shadow whenever an eclipse occurred. I knew that barring some barrier that I couldn't conceive, I would get to every total solar eclipse in my life.
It was a very spontaneous thing which happened. So I still don't understand that why it happened, but that was the instinct. So only logical explanation is that eclipse just occupies you entirely, it consumes you. So you don't have, you just have to see and witness the eclipse. It's like, you know, all your, if I give an analogy of a computer, you know, so if you are doing a heavy download, you should stop all the other browsing work. So it was just that. It was clogging my bandwidth, which was, you know, so experience was somewhere diminished.
And what I say to myself is, okay, I'm sure I won't make it, but who knows? My hometown will have an eclipse, in fact, in 2081. So I will be 124. But I hope to make it, because again, I could see that eclipse at sunset and then I could die. You see, it's okay, I hope I can make it. Who knows? I don't think so, but it's a dream. I have other dreams, of course, but that one would be my last dream.
And when I saw that black totality, I mean, time just stopped. It was just 53 seconds. But it's 53 seconds, like a lifetime of understanding, suddenly, you know, coming to the fore. And I said, this black has so many voices speaking, and with such intensity, and in this brightness all around, I never would hear or give words to that, those thoughts. And the black dark moon, that intensity of darkness was the bound, was really yelling and screaming and telling tales. And I saw it as mirroring in many ways what was within me. It kind of doubly emphasized the fractal nature of the universe to me. But what was happening there, those things speaking volumes, was in fact actually reflecting a consciousness whose own thoughts were bound by the parameters of darkness, which actually is not there. The moon is not dark. Right? It's just in the background of the sun, it becomes the most intense darkness one seen. I've never seen a black shining. I mean, that seems to be a contradiction of terms. But can we paint a black like that? No. Can we talk about it? I don't even think you can articulate it. Because at the end of the day, that eclipse represents in many ways a slant, a conceptual slant of the way we are. The eclipse is always a thing that's so unexpected, in the sense, yeah, we know there's going to be Bailey beads, yeah, we know there's going to be, you know, this totality, but we don't know how the churn is going to come in your heart when you see it. You don't know which side you're going to see the little, streamers of solar events happening. And more than that, all that is, they're like, they're not the main act. The birds flying in the opposite direction, the things cooling down, even the blackness coming in the center. Those are all things that you expect. But what you always, I think, in all the eclipses I've seen, fail to expect is the impact it makes on you within. That's a new voice every time saying, this is it.